What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host again today is Randeep Janda, of course, color analyst here on Sportsnet 650 and part of Hockey Night in Canada Punjabi as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And of course, Randeep Janda on Sportsnet 650 is a presentation of Bells and Whistles, your new favorite place to catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more on Fraser, right in the Fraser Hood on socials at Bells and Whistles YVR. Randeep, what's going on, man?
What's going on? I'm not going to lie. I'm going to Bells and Whistles right after the show.
So what, there's the big footy match today.
The Europa League final. Yes. Dom is wearing his United jersey. Yes. So there's going to be a party. A lot of Manu fans.
You're an Arsenal supporter.
Yeah, I like a good time too, though.
Yeah, but you know. United Tottenham. Where's the rooting interest?
Such a bad dilemma. But I'm going to say I'm actually cheering for United because Tottenham hasn't won a trophy in forever. They're North London rivals of Arsenal. The arch rivals cannot pick up.
Is this like the equivalent of Leafs versus Oilers in the Stanley Cup final, if that had happened?
Yes,
from a Canucks fan
very
perspective.
Much so. I hate Manchester United with a passion. Yep. I also hate Tottenham. It's like Canucks fans. They, you know, if that
they
had
got a
happened,
lot of hate to go around.
Absolutely. So
it's a big Wednesday, as always, on the show. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to do the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They're going to be very upset with us that we started talking about soccer before we got in a hockey mention on the show.
Don't worry, we'll talk about some basketball for Donnie. Yeah,
well, a lot of basketball talk on the crossover today with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. And at 1 o'clock, of course, Jason Buchla from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He joins us at 1 o'clock. Always look forward to getting a chance to chat with Books, and we can take your text as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Just before we go to the crossover, Florida, the Panthers, just continue to roll. They beat Carolina 5-2 last night to take a 1-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Final. You don't want to overreact to one game, but the beatdowns they put on the Leafs towards the end of that series, I know they lost game 6 at home, but still two resounding wins in games 5 and 7, a comfortable win last night against a really good opponent. Florida looks like they are really starting to find their peak at the right time.
Well-oiled machine. They've got a lot of players that, I mentioned it yesterday, master of the dark arts. You know, so you look at Marchand and him mixing it up at the end of that game. They like that. They're so aggressive. And now the question is, does Carolina, they took that punch, right? We were talking about they hadn't been tested in the playoffs. Well, you took that haymaker. How do you react in game 2?
All right. Right now it is time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They're the co-hosts of Donnie and Dolly on Check TV, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. They join us every Wednesday here for the crossover. Don, Rick, what's going on?
Gentlemen.
Hey, guys.
Now,
hockey and basketball.
I was just going to say, I want to check in. Is everyone okay over there? Because I know last night you were exposed to the sport of basketball. I want to just make sure everything's fine. Everything's copacetic over there.
We're big basketball fans. I'm a big basketball fan. I just had an issue with the rundown on a certain sports show last night.
Donnie, all I'll say is I don't know what network you were watching. But if you want wall-to-wall Stanley Cup playoff coverage, Rogers Sportsnet, Canada's home for hockey for the next 12 years. Post-game interviews, post-game analysis.
Good company guy right there.
We got it all right here on Rogers. So there you go.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I know them well. They're one of several companies that have laid Rick and I off.
Yeah, it's funny how that works in this industry.
Very familiar with them.
Well, Donnie, I actually wore my New York Knicks hat for you today.
There you go.
Just in honor of you.
Randeep's repping basketball.
Ah, very good. Well, they're still alive.
It's true. It's true.
We'll see if they lead the broadcast tonight. I don't think so with the Oilers playing, but we'll see. All right, but we do got lots to get into with you guys, especially on hockey. We're a hockey show here. And I've got to start with the interview you guys had yesterday with Rick Tocchet, of course, former head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And congrats to you guys on, one, getting him on the air, but also doing a really good job with the interview. you know, there's a lot of different directions we could go with this. As always with Rick Tocchet, he wasn't afraid to talk about things, to share his pretty candid thoughts about different things. I was surprised a little bit about just how candid he was, even talking about Elias Pettersson now that he's, you know, no longer employed by the Vancouver Canucks. What were your kind of big takeaways, your lasting impressions from your chat with Rick Tocchet yesterday?
Well, I think first and foremost, Rick and I right off the bat realized that he was in a really good mood.
Yeah,
right.
And I'm trying to think. I don't know if I really remember him ever being in a bad mood, even post-game after a bad loss. But you could just feel that he was going to be open about everything. So at that point, we realized nothing was off limits. He mentioned one of the things that, you know, we talk about and we get criticized for, and that people might say, well, that's not really a big deal. Practice facility.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he admitted that it was not the factor, but was definitely a factor in his decision. Surprised to hear that. Rick asked him whether or not he's a quitter, like a lot of people accused him of online, and certainly not to his face. And he went on to explain how most people would probably accept the job that he took in Philadelphia if they were given the opportunity, and that he's never been a quitter in his life. And you mentioned that to him, Rick. And then the whole talk with Pettersson, and I know you have talked about it on your station, all of you, us as well. I think we were all floored by Rick saying during the season that Elias has got to learn to move his feet.
Yep.
He expanded on that yesterday. And talked about how the game has changed, how you can't slow the game down the way you did when you were a minor hockey player, when you were a junior hockey player, even earlier in his NHL career. Things have changed, and he has to build on his game. He has to learn how to do that, Rick.
He gave us insight, guys. Not all of it. And he was a little guarded.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't open up and give us absolutely everything, but I thought he gave us some insight. He said, look, I'm not a quitter. I had a decision to make, and I made it. You know, you come up with slogans like embrace the hard and meet pressure with pressure, and then you walk away after the Canucks made you a great offer. He said, I'm not a quitter. I had a decision to make, and I made it. So if Quinn Hughes leaves in 2 years, are you guys going to say he quit on the Canucks? And he's the captain. Pretty important position on the Canucks. That guy gets up and leaves. Are these people on Twitter going to say that Quinn Hughes quit on the Canucks? Every day, people in society leave companies for other companies for various reasons. Donnie and I have done it. No one blinks an eye.
We didn't want to, but we did.
Well,
that's a different thing than quitting.
Yeah.
But, you know, no one blinks an eye. They leave companies all the time. His contract was up. He had absolutely every right to leave. You know what? They made him a great offer. I'll tell you one thing I'll give the Canucks credit on. After hearing what Seattle offered Tocchet, after hearing what Philadelphia offered Tocchet and what the Canucks did, he put himself in a position. Boston was right there, but he put himself in a position to get a damn good raise.
He had leverage.
Yep.
And there was a ton of openings. I do not blame the guy for leaving. He had his reasons. Rutherford's future, Hughes leaving, no practice facility, Pettersson struggling as the number one center. Just some of the reasons. Like, I mean, guys, Pettersson signed for 7 more years. You don't think that played into his decision? Pretty well, damn right.
Absolutely.
You know, he had pretty good reasons to walk away. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. The other thing he said, guys, was the situation with the media in Vancouver. And he welcomed. Now,
he loves
was
us.
A member of the media.
He thanked us in his statement.
Exactly.
When he
went out,
yes.
And that, you know, players, teammates, coaches should embrace the fact that people care.
Yeah.
And not everybody's wired that way, but it certainly is the way he's wired, and he didn't mind it at all. And I got the feeling that that did not play a part in him leaving.
So we love it when players and coaches are honest, right? And I thought Rick, your point, like, you know, maybe he didn't open up fully, but there were some comments about Elias Pettersson. We don't, you know, hear coaches talk about, you know, other teams' players, and now Rick Tocchet is the coach of another team. There was a lot of openness, and him recognizing that I hear people are talking about me. I hear that people say I play a dump and chase style. Like, you could tell he wanted to also say a few things. That's kind of surprising because coaches usually, when they take that new job, they just kind of say, hey, that's my past situation. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, and he expressed his belief in Elias Pettersson, by the way. Yeah. It wasn't all about, you know, him having to change his game. He believes that he can change his game and that he can live up to his contract. At least that's what he said. At least that's what he said publicly. So it was refreshing. And also him hearing the talk about the dump and chase hockey. And he made the point about, hey, watch Florida. Watch Carolina. They do the same things. They have the same type of approach. They just do it a whole lot better, and they've got the personnel to do it.
Well, if you want to talk also about, and he brought up the, it was Brough and I interviewing him when he said the thing about reprogramming Petey's brain, and he's brought that up about two or three times then. So that one really stuck with him as well, the reaction to that. But you watch that game last night, and you see exactly what he's talking about. There's not a lot of time and space to regroup and reset. You got to make really quick snap decisions in those types of games. And I thought Tocchet, and again, you know, his response to when you asked him about people calling him a quitter, Rick, he explained himself, but he didn't get super defensive. He wasn't outraged about it. He was like, yeah, you know what? People are entitled to their opinion. I can see why some people might think that. I don't think that, but I get it. And I think, you know, especially in light of the conversation happening in Toronto right now, right, where the Leafs collapse again and the Panthers come out and say, oh, the poor Leafs, they couldn't possibly beat us because you guys are just so mean to them and the fans expect so much. Mm-hmm. And then you hear Tocchet say, and I think give just a perfect example of how to handle media and pressure and fan reaction in a tough market. If the coach can do it, if the coach can handle it like he does, I think players should be able to figure out how to handle it in tough Canadian media markets too.
Yeah.
The fact he knew everything, the shots about the dump and chase and all that stuff, these guys are well aware, guys, of what's being said on Canucks Twitter. They got buddies who send them stuff. Hey, look what the Canucks media or Canucks Twitter is saying. The players themselves, guys, they know everything that's being said in the market about them. If you think the Canucks and Canucks players and coaches don't know what's being said about them, you guys are out to lunch. They know everything. Like, we didn't even bring up the dump and chase. Mm-hmm, we didn't even bring up stuff. And Tocchet just brought it up because he's very well aware of what the Vancouver media and the Vancouver Canucks Twitter was saying about him. But I just I texted him after the interview, and I said, hey, thanks. I really appreciate that. And he was really, really appreciative for the opportunity to come on the show and talk about his time in Vancouver. We didn't get 100% of the answers, guys, but I think we got a lot closer to getting them.
Yeah, you made that point, Jamie, about handling the media. When you think, I know he's older, and as we grow older, we tend to know how to deal with things a little bit better. But just think about how much Rick Tocchet had to deal with the media versus the players. It's not even close. And Rick Tocchet was there, before games, after games, before and after practices, at various events. And he got it. And I know he was at one time a member of the media, so maybe that's part of it. But they have advisors, they have people around them in the organization, their agents, et cetera, to let them know what they should expect. And I think players, if they were more like Rick Tocchet, I think their lives would be a whole lot easier if they just accepted it. Look, you're getting free publicity from the media. It should be something you enjoy and embrace. And I think the biggest problem would be if nobody cared, including reporters.
That's well, it. On that note, that's though, it. Rick, I got a question for you. Like, when you're chatting with players and agents, is it a gift or a curse, the Canadian market and the pressure that comes along with it?
Oh,
well, don't get him going on this.
It plays a role, Randeep, 100%. Agents right now. Okay, let's talk about July 1st coming up. I'll give you an example. Everybody, Sam Bennett. Oh, go get Mitch Marner. Go get Sam Bennett. Do you honestly think that Vancouver is on Sam Bennett's list? Do you think that Mitch Marner's got... If you ask Bennett and Marner to name five teams they want to go to, you actually think that the Vancouver Canucks are on that list? There's not a hope in heck. Look at this. Look at the soap opera drama. Look at Jim Rutherford said a couple of weeks ago, we're not on the top priority for free agents. right? And yes, when there's a lot of outside noise, like in Vancouver, agents notice it, players want to stay away. But then there's other things too, Randeep. There is the taxes. Like, you know, Sam Bennett has got a really good situation in Florida. Taxes, great team, no media. It's a beautiful place, Florida. Why are so many players flocking to Tampa Bay and Florida the last few years? Taxes, no media. They're winning. It's a great place right now to be.
You go on and on about how the players, especially how tough they are, and they can handle any situation.
Yeah.
They want to go and disappear in Florida.
And do you guys remember when this switched? Because I think, like, growing up, and maybe I just wasn't plugged in, but now this is a bad example because it didn't work out, but, like, Mark Messier, he was a big star. He signed in Vancouver.
Yeah,
right?
I had to bring that one up.
No, but you know what I mean. But it's like, it wasn't like, oh, he would never sign in a Canadian market. It's like, no, he's gonna go wherever. And at some point, it just became, we all accepted this idea that NHL players are just never going to sign or are very reluctant to sign where people really care about the sport. And I don't think it was that way when I was growing up. Again, maybe I just wasn't plugged in enough to realize it. But it seems like it switched somewhere, and it baffles me a little bit. I get everyone's wired differently, so I understand some players are going to want to crave the anonymity in that. I get that. But it just seems like it's like 95% of the league thinks that way. You know what I mean? I think if anything, it would be a little bit, there would be some difference of opinion among the players.
You know, NHL is different. Hockey is different than the other pro sports in that you've got these different levels of attention. Taxes aside, I'll get to that in a second. But you can come up to Canada and you can be a rock star, or a place like Detroit and Boston, or something mid-level of a celebrity like a New York, or you can go hide in a place like Florida or maybe even Tampa Bay. Maybe that's a bad example, but you've got these choices that you don't have in most other sports, where you're a rock star and you know the good and the bad that comes with all of that comes with it. The other thing too is you think about like Tennessee, Nashville, Florida with the Panthers and Tampa Bay. I think I've got this right, with Dallas and Texas and Seattle with Washington State. Those taxes come into play now too.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Where, big listen, time. I can take home more of my paycheck. Well, I get American, I'm going there. That wasn't the case when even you were younger, Jamie.
Yeah. Well, and look at Rantanen. Why do you think he ended up in Dallas? Look at how much money he's going to take home as opposed to a Canadian market. The other one, guys, is cost of living. Vancouver and Toronto, I do have agents tell me the cost of living is a problem. You know, when Jalen Chatfield was about to hit July 1st, and, you know, he got just a little bit over $3 million, but that number, if he was ever going to sign in Vancouver, would have been way more than three. And one of the reasons is cost of living.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things hitting Canadian markets right now. Cost of living, taxes, media, social media. It's a problem. All those things are hitting a lot of players right now.
Well, player acquisition is going to be, you know, obviously a focus for this team. But the coaches, right? Assistant coaches, that conversation, you know, Adam Foote mentioned it last week, guys, where I want to have a veteran presence, maybe if possible, but it's not the end-all be-all. What are we looking at here when it comes to these assistant coaches? You know, we had a conversation yesterday about, in some ways, these are more important hires than the head coaches, because they're going to really transfer that culture to the players, to that one-on-one instruction, the PK, the power play. What do we expect there?
Well, there's a lot of guys that could end up in Vancouver as assistants that are still interviewing for head coaching jobs, Randeep.
Right.
So you nailed it. Adam Foote, first coaching job. You know, he's going to need some good veterans with him, boy. He can't get rookies, and he's going to have to get some guys that have been in the NHL a long time to help insulate him and make sure his first year in Vancouver is a good one. But there's all I can say on that front is there's a lot of guys that are interviewing for head coaching jobs right now that are still in the mix that might end up in Vancouver.
But what about somebody, and Rick, I'm asking you something I should have asked on our show. What about somebody like Mark Crawford, who's associated with Adam Foote, of course?
Crawford and Foote have a great relationship going back. We all know that, right?
Yep.
And they're both big fans of each other. But where is Crawford now? Wasn't he in Europe?
He stepped away, I believe, though, from the team he was coaching in Europe.
Yeah, Yeah, he was coaching a really good team, I think, in Switzerland,
yes.
Right?
But I think he stepped away, I believe.
Yeah, Zurich.
Yeah, Zurich, yeah. Lions. Yeah. Yeah, Zurich Lions. So, you know what? Mark Crawford's there, but there's a lot of guys right now. You know, this Mitch Love guy, you know, the Canucks obviously looked at him. But I, from what I've been told, there's a lot of interest in him. And I said that about 3 or 4 weeks ago, too. So a lot of these guys, there's some good young coaches that teams are looking at right now. And it's going to be interesting to see. I think Chicago's got their coach today. What's his name? I think they're getting
Blasho.
Close to naming a guy.
Blasho.
Blasho, yep. So there you
former
go.
Red
that's
going to
be
yeah.
That's going to be one less team. Boston still looking. So we're not done yet. There's a lot of names out there floating around.
And the other focus, of course, I mean, we'll see how they fill out Adam Foote's staff and who they bring in, but we're all watching what they do up front and who they can acquire to help the forward group. And, you know, as you pointed out, Rick, I think you're bang on. We shouldn't expect Sam Bennett. We shouldn't expect Mitch Marner, certainly. Probably not Nick Ehlers. You go down the list of the top UFAs, that's going to be hard to do. Jim Rutherford has said, we're probably not at the top of people's list, so we're going to have to do our work through trades. But I keep thinking, do they want to trade Lekkomäki? Probably not. Do they want to trade Willander now that they have him under contract? Probably not. D. Petey, Drance, when he's here, says they love him. He's basically untouchable. So they need to go out and acquire these needle movers. But who are they? Like, what are they going to give up? How are they going to win the bidding if the right player does shake loose this offseason?
Well, you mentioned Elias Pettersson, and I agree. I don't think you want to mess with him. He's a horse.
Yeah.
But the position of strength is defense right now. And if you want to improve that top six, you know, you're not going to give up a sixth rounder. You got to do something. I would think it would have to be somebody from their blue line corps that would have to move in order for that position of strength, in order for them to improve that top six. One name that we've heard from a couple of people on our show, and now he's an RFA, so I don't know how the Canucks would go about acquiring him, exactly how, but Marco Rossi from the Minnesota Wild, who very quietly had a 60-point season in 82 games for Minnesota, Austrian center, and he's been mentioned a couple of times on our show by our guests, and that's a name out there that, you know, it's doable, put it that way, for a team like the Canucks, like Rick said, not exactly everybody's number one destination, but if they show some love to him, maybe he's somebody who ends up here.
If they don't get, but do keep in mind, guys, if they don't get what they want in a trade, they're going to have no choice but to hit July 1st and try to get somebody there. You know, Matt Duchene is a centerman that I would look at. If I can't get what I want through the trade and teams are asking for too much, and Duchene's still available there July 1st. I think that's a guy I'd probably – remember they took a chance on Ian Cole. He was older, and Ian Cole worked out. A lot of these free agents are over 30 guys. They're 30 years plus, and you don't want to give too much term and money. But I will say this. Remember the year they bought out OEL?
Yeah.
Well, midway through the season, I was told they weren't going to buy him out. Mm. And you know what happened was they couldn't move Myers and Garland to free up the cap space. Then they were stuck, and they're saying, oh, boy, now we're going to have to buy out OEL. Then they used that money to get Susie and Cole, and hold on, there was one other
Suter.
Guy.
Yeah.
Suter. No, no.
Bluger.
They signed Bluger, too. So sometimes you can sit there and talk all you want about we're going to do this, but hockey people change their minds all the time, week to week, day to day. And if they don't get their top six pieces in the trade, they're going to have to go to July 1st because they have changed philosophy in the past. And the last time they did it was 2023.
And another subject for another day, what you just talked about, was it a good idea to buy out OEL? It's hard for Canucks.
I think
so. So much better than he did here. I know he's in a different role, but my Lord.
Well,
I think you love that. OEL, what he's making right now and the role he's playing, but not what he was making here.
Yes.
I think they had to do it. I get it.
Sure,
it's tough.
But it's going to really bite them come next year.
It is.
And
it
didn't
tough.
Seem like it was a fit here either, right? Like that play that we're seeing elsewhere, it didn't seem like, you know, it was working for him out here as well. And then and at some point, that kind of, you start slumping your shoulders, you lose the confidence in your game, and that's what we saw with OEL.
Yeah. All right, guys, before we let you go.
He's actually saying the Canucks made the right move. The Canucks made the right move.
And he got hurt at the Worlds, too. Sure. Don't forget. Yeah. OEL got that foot injury, which didn't help, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Didn't help.
lots of ex-Canucks still going. Jonah Gadjevich, 2 goals, anyways, for the Florida Panthers in these playoffs.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Let's get it for that guy.
Let's dig into that
happy
one.
Happy for that guy.
Before we let you guys go, game one, Western Conference Finals tonight, Edmonton, Dallas. I'm starting to get worried. I always cheer against the other Canadian teams. I'm starting to get worried about the Edmonton Oilers. Do you guys see them going back to the Cup Finals here?
Well, everybody talks about their offense and worries about their goaltending. They gave up 10 goals against Vegas. And that was without Matthias Ekholm, who's supposed to be back. So my guess is they're going back.
Yeah.
I don't think Dallas' defense has been all that great. Ottinger has bailed them out a lot. I would say Oilers will advance.
Donnie, I saw that you gave
Stars right now the Stars special teams are better, power play and penalty killing. Did you see the Oilers power play against Edmonton was at 9%? Can you believe they won that series with that? Don't count out the Stars. I think the Stars get there.
Donnie, I saw that you picked the
Randy,
Leafs.
Before you
I was going to say, I saw that you picked the Leafs in the last round. So are you going to give the Oilers the Donnie Taylor kiss of death here?
You know, we're out of time, guys.
See you later.
Mr. Toronto, yeah. Don Taylor, hey. They call him.
That's right. Yeah. No, this is Mr. Toronto.
That's right. Well, let's not get him started on that. All right, guys, we appreciate it. As always, thanks for doing this, and we'll chat next week.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you later.
That is Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal. They're the co-hosts of Donnie and Dolly on Czech TV. You can watch it Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Czech TV. Joining us as they do every Wednesday for the crossover. And as you learned there, you really got to jump in.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes there's a bit of a delay. There's a bit of a lag.
Yeah,
Sometimes you just got to, like,
it was my first crossover.
You know what? I know Rick wants to talk. I'm just going to talk over him until he stops.
I'm a not so young Punjabi guy, but I respect my elders. I did not want to cut off Rick there and Donnie. All right. So next time I'll be a little bit more rude. Yeah. What was it? What you called it yesterday? The Drancian
Edge? The Drancian Edge. That's what you need to bring.
I can't bring that.
Just needle Dhaliwal until he breaks, until he snaps.
I was respectful the first time.
There you go. One respectful time. Then the next time you're
next
here,
time
you
I'll
really,
be a jerk.
You can really let loose. All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Thoughts coming in already. A lot of people saying, yeah, Mark Crawford back in Vancouver. So maybe there is some interest there, although... Again, having stepped back from his Swiss team, I don't know if he's interested. Who knows? But there is that relationship.
His son does work for the team as well, Dylan Crawford.
Yeah, there is that relationship between Adam Foote and Mark Crawford, of course. So keep sending your text in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Jason Buchla is going to join us at 1 o'clock as well. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with Randeep Janda. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. And before we get back to the conference finals, I hope you haven't had your fill of Rick Tocchet content yet, because Rick Tocchet doing the media rounds. He's going to be on Kipper and Bourne, which, of course, you can hear here on 650 at 2:30 today, Pacific time. So this must be why him and Jim Rutherford get along so well.
Oh, yeah.
They both love a podcast.
They've been media trained.
Yes.
To say the least. Okay,
they love talking.
It's great to have content, but this is kind of like your ex just going out there and basically flaunting, talking to everybody. Like
making the tell-all Facebook post about what went down.
It's complicated, or in a relationship to now open to whatever, right? Like essentially what's going on here with Rick Tocchet. Airing the
talking about how great the practice facility is in Philadelphia,
the new pads,
just rubbing it in. Yeah.
Oh man,
it's tough. It's a tough scene.
So he's got two interviews today, apparently.
Yes,
had one yesterday.
Yeah.
And who knows? There might be like a documentary coming on this at some point. At this rate, the way he's doing media tours,
what we need is to get him and Rutherford on the same podcast together. Yeah. Really hash it out. That's what we need.
I feel like John Shannon would be the guy.
Absolutely.
I feel like he would be the guy.
I think we can make this happen. I think we can make it happen. Two guys that love to go on podcasts.
Could you imagine, though, if they just, like, surprised each other, though? Like, all right, we've got Jim Rutherford on the line, and now we're bringing in Rick Tocchet. Like, they don't know. It's a surprise. It's like he's dropped into
the
Zoom call.
So good. That would be fantastic. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Before we get to game one of the Western Conference Final tonight, between Edmonton and Dallas, I did want to take a little bit of time to dig into what we saw last night. And as I said off the top, just another comfortable performance from Florida. Don't want to overreact, but they are rolling right now. They win 5-2 against Carolina. Carolina's now lost 13 straight Eastern Conference Finals games, which is an incredible number. But as I said off the top of the show just before we started the crossover, really the story to me was the Panthers limiting their own mistakes, primarily by beating the Carolina forecheck and then capitalizing on Carolina's mistakes. And whether that was them forcing the turnovers with their forecheck or just Carolina making an unforced error, Florida took advantage. And that's a really, really tough combo to beat. I thought actually former Canucks defenseman Nate Schmidt had a really interesting quote. Now, I think he actually said this ahead of Tuesday's game one, but Eric Engels has the quote up at sportsnet.ca. And Nate Schmidt said, I think the whole series is going to be based on what D-Core can get it to their forwards faster. There are a lot of other parts of this series, your special teams and all that stuff. But the underlying factor will be if we can get it to our guys faster than they can. And then he also talked about how when you're facing a team like Carolina, there's no one-size-fits-all approach. Mm-hmm. It's not, well, they're a super aggressive forecheck team, so this is what you do to beat it every way, right? You always chip it off the glass and out to make sure they don't have time against you, or you always reverse it to the weak side where there's space. What he said was you have to be able to read it in the moment. You have to have all of these different options in your toolkit, and you have to be able to go to them when it requires, and that requires you to make really quick split-second decisions under a ton of pressure. Florida did that last night, and that is so hard to pull off against a team as disciplined, as ferocious on the forecheck as Carolina is, but that's what they did, and if they're capable of playing with that much composure and that much poise, they're going to be a very difficult team to beat.
Yeah, it's the ability to have those in-game reads at such an elite level, and that's what Florida does really good and really well, even on the attacking sides, right? Their ability to make those decisions as they hit the neutral zone. You know you're going to have puck support, but hey, you have to read what the opposition's giving you. If they're stepping up on you, yeah, you chip the puck in deep and then you go in the forecheck. But if they're giving you room, you've got a defenseman that's so able to pinch in, like Nate Schmidt. You know, you can go through the list of players, Gustav Forsling, guys that we never even thought had that in their game, Nico Mikkola. You know, there's players that are stepping up and playing that role. They understand they're being predictable, and we hear this a lot in Vancouver. But in two or three situations at once, they read the game so quickly, yes, where they make life difficult. And I think, you know, when they lost that cup final to Vegas a couple of years ago, they were primarily a chip and chase team. And Vegas beat their forecheck. Like, they were just so quick at beating it, and then it was up the ice hitting them in transition. Since then, Florida has added layers to their game to say, we're not going to be a chip and chase team. We can come down the middle as well. We can beat you, you know, if you give us room. And that versatility, that ability to read within the game, Jamie, to Nate Schmidt's point, to your point, is so high end, where now a team that is, you know, basically all gas, no brakes in Carolina,
yeah,
is now saying, oh, we got to deal with basically two or three different game plans with this Panthers team.
And the result is, and, you know, we always talk about a team being connected, right? And being playing in a system and buying in and all of that. And to me, Florida's the perfect example of that. Because it's not just the defenseman who retrieves the puck who has to make the right read, right? The rest of the team has to read off him to know what to do to support him. And that's how you're going to have successful breakouts. And that's how, yeah, sometimes it's going to be just, you know, chip the off the glass and out and go try to win a battle in the neutral zone. You're going to do that sometimes. And they have the guys who can win battles in the neutral zone. Yep. Other times it's going to be controlled exits, right? The, Nico Mikkola had a great controlled exit that led to the AJ Greer goal for Florida last night. And it's just that idea of reading the play, making the right play under pressure, and playing connected as a team. To me, that was one of the biggest differences from the Canucks two seasons ago now, the year they won the Pacific Division, to last year, where how many times were there moments where either a forward or a defenseman has the puck in the defensive zone and maybe has the ability to skate it out of trouble or has the ability to make a pass, and instead it's boom, off the glass and out. And instead of reading it, it's just falling back on the easiest option all the time. That like that's the difference between the good teams and the great teams. The great teams make those plays under pressure.
They do, and the key word there, pressure, right?
Yes.
The Panthers are able to do this in game sevens. They're able to do this late in the playoffs. They're able to do this to win the cup. And when you're trying to build out a team, you have to get it right in practice. And we've heard that from Rick Tocchet last year of, hey, this is what we practice, but in the game, attacking that neutral zone or making the play and not resetting, you know, those are things the Panthers do so well under stress. That's the next level where you got to get it right in the regular season first. And the Canucks had trouble with that, finding that predictability, finding that, call it whatever you want, right? Maybe it's, you know, call it guts, call it confidence, call I don't care what it
poise,
is. Poise yeah. is be another one. You know, they couldn't do that in the regular season, but that's what the elite level teams do where you know you're going to get hit with a heavy forecheck. Are you able to make that play? Are you able to take your first read, make that play, and then your team's going to feed off that? They play confidently. You talked about winning neutral zone battles. Like, your first read has to be an amazing read. You have to understand what your teammate is doing and then act accordingly, right? Like, if you're a half a step behind because you don't know what they're going to do, you're behind it. That's where neutral zone giveaways happen, and then they hit you with speed. Yeah. So, you know, you have to be on top of that.
And I think the big, I mean, there's a lot of differences between the Panthers and the Canucks, of course, and especially how the Canucks played this past season. But, you know, Rick Tocchet has brought up, and I've brought it up as well, right? People are criticizing chip and chase. Well, look at the Florida Panthers. They do a lot of chip and chase. The difference is, it's not just about dumping the puck in, right? You have to set yourself up for success from the defensive zone through the neutral zone. Yeah. You can still play connected as a team if you're playing dump and chase hockey. And the Panthers do that through the neutral zone to put themselves in a position to be successful on the forecheck. I know we've had Landon on before, and he's talked about how there's a big difference between just kind of dumping it because that's your only option and you don't want to turn the puck over. Yep. And dumping it in with a plan, right? As part of a tactical approach where you know you have guys who are going to be able to get there and win the race or at least put pressure on the defenseman. It's the execution of the plan more so than it is the plan itself. And look, I don't want to turn this into relitigating, you know, Rick Tocchet's system and yada, yada, yada and all that, because I think it's still perfectly fair to say, well, if that wasn't working for the Canucks, you have to switch things up, right? Or if it's, hey, you got to recognize maybe the personnel aren't capable of doing it, so you have to try something different. I think that's totally fair. But I also see, I see the kind of culmination of what the Canucks were trying to do, and they were just never able to get close this year.
Yeah, and I think here's the thing about the Canucks. Last season, when they took the Oilers to seven games, there was a realization of you need more offense, right?
Yes.
But they scored a fair bit in the regular season. You could see maybe the attack in the playoffs was one-dimensional. What this team really lacked at that point was rush offense, being a threat in transition. You add that layer to their game. On that team, maybe they win game seven. Maybe they are in a position to be a team that gets close to the Stanley Cup final. Now, last year, player personnel changes. Maybe they tried to focus on creating off the rush with the wrong pieces in training camp. It doesn't hit, but that identity of having chip and chase in your game, neutral zone speed, attacking that way is still important. Watch the playoffs right now. Low to high, deflecting shots and essentially broken plays, that's a part of playoff hockey. So I think the Canucks are on the right track. The biggest gap, two things for this team now, are going to be transition offense. You need to find that, right? You need to have play drivers and guys that can attack with the puck on their stick. They don't have enough guys that can do that right now. And with that comes with you need to have the right skilled players, right?
So yeah, and because I also think, like, yeah, you're right about the, you know, broken plays and screens and deflections and all that, but I also look at it and Florida has the skill that when the other team does turn it over and now you get the puck with a little bit of time and space in the offensive zone, they have the guys who can make plays in that
situation.
And that's where you get to, you know, the cross ice passes and more of the tic-tac-toe plays when you've used your pressure to generate the turnover and have the puck. You have to have the skill in that situation too.
100% you do, and that's the biggest gap for this team right now, right? We're talking about adding 2 to 3 top six forwards. Like,
that's easy, right?
Look at Florida, and I know we were talking with Donnie and Rick about the tax advantages. The tax advantages only work if you're a good team.
Yep.
So, you know, I've argued with a bunch of hosts on that. I think it is an advantage, no doubt. Anybody that says it's not an advantage, in my opinion, is out to lunch. Anytime you have more take-home pay, you're going to be like, all right, good team in City A, good team in City B, I get more money. I'm going to probably the one that gives me a little bit more money, right? If the situations are near equal. But beyond that, you have to be in a situation where they have to have a winning culture. They have to have a coach that you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And John Cooper and Paul Maurice are both of those guys. So we can say tax advantage, but you have to build out something. You have to build an identity. And the Canucks right now don't have an identity.
Yeah.
Hard to play against is not an identity. That's a descriptor, one of many descriptors.
Well, and that's also something that every team in the NHL wants.
For sure. Nobody wants to say, hey, we want to be easy to play against.
No, but that's just, you're just saying we want to be an NHL team because every NHL team wants to consider themselves hard to play against and wants to be hard to play against. So what's your identity beyond that?
That's a catchphrase in a press conference. Beyond that, you have to build that out. Is that a, you know, aggressive forecheck? Is that, you know, I think a lot of that with this team, we see on the back end what they'll be. They've got some nasty characters back there with Elias Pettersson. You've got some, you know, defensively sound individuals there with Filip Hronek and Marcus Pettersson. There's some chippiness there as well, but high-end skill in the forward group, I'm not sure what that identity is. And that's something that's going to be addressed maybe in the next month or so. We'll see. Hopefully we got some breaking news to deal with because this team does need... they need some difference makers.
Yeah.
And Elias Pettersson is a part of that conversation. But more than anything, you got to hit November, December. You got to kind of know what your identity is at that point. We went into April not knowing what this team's identity was.
Mm-hmm. And see, I think they have... the Canucks have, I almost think, and somebody texted in, you can't forget about Florida's defense. They can all move the puck and shoot. Tocchet wanted trees that couldn't move the puck. And look, I think we can all recognize the Vincent Desharnais, Noah Juulsen era on the back end was a failure. Having said that, you look at the makeup of Vancouver's defense right now versus Florida's defense. I don't think there's that big a gap, quite frankly. Like, Seth Jones and Ariat Ekblad and Gustav Forsling, obviously that's a really, really nice top three.
Nobody was, you know, raving about Uvis Bielinskis.
No, they also got Nate Schmidt and Dmitry Kulikov back there, right?
Like, Nico Mikkola.
Yeah, and Nico Mikkola, who's a very good player, but...
but nobody was saying, no. Hey, I remember having this conversation when he was a free agent coming out of St. Louis, and I said, maybe that's the guy you look at.
Yeah.
Even though... I thought that. I had no idea he could be this type of player, but
yeah,
that has to do with the style of game you play.
They're getting the most out of it. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I think you can, if we're talking about identity, and you look at the blue line the Canucks are going to go into next year with, and we'll see if there's any subtractions that they, you know, they trade away from the blue line in order to bolster their forward group. But I absolutely think the blue line is at a high enough level for that to be the identity of their team. And not just, oh, we're a really good defensive team, but we have a D-core that's capable of, one, playing good defense, two, moving the puck well, and three, they should be capable of chipping in offensively, right? Obviously, Quinn Hughes does. Filip Hronek should be able to. Marcus Pettersson's not a zero on that end. I think Elias Pettersson's got some room to grow in that as well. Tyler Myers can chip. Like,
yep,
they should have that 1 through at least 5, maybe 1 through 6 group that they're not all high end, but that they can all help you in every phase of the game. And I think that can be a really powerful identity for them.
Even the 7th D, if it's Victor Mancini, has that element to his game where he likes the puck on his stick. We saw him score some, you know, in Abbotsford, of course, he plays a little bit more open of a game. But I think that's going to be key. And the Filip Hronek mention, if you do stick with that pairing, I think it limits his offense in terms of goal scoring.
Sure.
His points will be there because he's going to distribute. If you get him on a different pairing, I'd like to see him use that shot more. I thought there was too much puck handling at moments, and you could see he was not necessarily confident. But if you are playing him away from Quinn, if there's another mix there, that's an area that I think he can give a lot more. You know, he's mm-hmm. got a booming shot. He just doesn't use it that often, and that's one of the most frustrating things about Filip Hronek.
Yeah. I get why they keep him with Quinn Hughes, but I think you're right that there maybe you get a little bit more out of Filip Pronik, at least specifically. And who knows, maybe if, you know, Villander's on the team or something, does that open up different possibilities for the team next year? Lee in Surrey texts in, if the Canucks had their 1C and 2C working properly last year, the dump and chase may not have looked nearly so ineffective. And I think that's a big part of it. As I said, you got to put your team in a position to be successful off the dump and chase, and they weren't able to do that with any consistency last year. Does having a better forward group change that, right? A forward group more capable of going in and winning those battles, but I think also a blue line that's more capable of getting out of their own zone clearly to kind of give the team chance to give the team a chance to be to have that speed through the neutral zone to set up the successful forecheck. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of thoughts coming in. This one from Benny from the Mox. The Canucks identity is trapped in mediocrity because we refuse to ever rebuild.
I don't think the coach is going to be saying that to the team. Hey, guys, this is our... No, I'm talking about the team identity. Benny, thanks for the
on-the-ice on-the-ice identity. They got to try to find something.
We know what Benny's mantra is going to be.
What's that?
That.
Just give up?
Just mediocrity. But I don't think Adam Foote's going to come
in with
that.
You don't think Adam Foote's going to embrace the mediocrity?
Embrace the mediocrity, so if we deliver more, it's a win.
Hey, that's how I live my life. Set expectations low. What is it? Under promise, over
deliver. Could you imagine that slogan on the Canucks locker room?
Hey. Under promise, over deliver. That's perfect.
And that's why we're not coaching.
Perry Sulkowski used to always, that was his mantra.
Perry did used to say that.
He's had a long, successful career in sports media. There you go, man. We should all be so lucky.
Boys, I know this is a hockey show, but it is a sports station, and we do have some breaking news. Sham Sharani reporting that OKC Thunder star and Canadian Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Donnie's going to have harsh words for you.
Officially harsh the MVP words. Of the NBA. We have a Canadian MVP once again.
Very good. Donnie Taylor is going to he's going to call in that line right now and yell at you.
604-280-650 if you're driving home and you want to vent at Dom Shermati, producer Dom Shermati, for interrupting the hockey show.
Okay.
With NBA news.
Donnie's tweet was wild last night. I have to admit, I saw that and I was like, all right, I'm shutting down Twitter for the night.
Donnie knows what he's doing. I think he knew
he was riling up.
I think he knew he was stepping in it there for sure. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Keep your thoughts coming in. We got a final segment open at the end of the show as well, so we can touch on some of the around the league stuff, maybe some teams that could be interesting trading partners for the Canucks this summer, as well as some of the other news and notes out there, and continue to look at the conference finals. But up next, Jason Buchla from Sportsnet and, of course, former director of amateur scouting with the Florida Panthers. So we can chat Panthers and their big win with Books, as well as look ahead to Edmonton and Dallas. And I'm not done digging into what went wrong with the Leafs either. So we'll get Buchla's thoughts on that and what's next for Toronto. All of that coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with Randeep Janda. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep sending your thoughts in. Jason Buchla is going to join us momentarily here. I also wanted to mention, by the way, in addition to Edmonton and Dallas tonight, game 3 between the Abbotsford Canucks and the Colorado Eagles is tonight at 6, and Brandon Assel will have the call here on Sportsnet 650 for that one. Now, it's tied 1-1, so Abbotsford's going to have to go down to Colorado and win 2 out of 3 in Colorado to keep their Calder Cup playoff hopes alive, but with the way Artur Shilovs has been playing in these Calder Cup playoffs, that's not necessarily an impossible task for the Abbotsford Canucks here.
No, it's not. And this is a pretty balanced group. They've got some young talent we've talked about, obviously, that came up and played in Vancouver. But they've got some really good veteran players that have been delivering, right? Sammy Blais has been an absolute monster in these playoffs, has led the way. So Shilovs and Blais have played a big role. So we'll see what they can do in Colorado. But with this group, winning in Colorado, I know it's not going to be easy.
2 out of 3, yeah.
But it's doable.
Absolutely doable, and hopefully they can keep the good times going for the Abbotsford Canucks. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we're going to be joined by Jason Bukala here momentarily. Again, it's Edmonton versus Dallas in a rematch of last year's Western Conference Finals, getting going tonight. And right now, to talk about that, the Eastern Conference Finals, and a lot more, joining us, as he does every Wednesday, from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He's our pal, Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? So Drancer is still, you know, with any luck, he might not come home from Jamaica
That's
for
right.
a couple more weeks, right?
Like, he's just going to, he's discovered a new lifestyle there. He's just going to live on the beach in Jamaica, I think, now.
He's got the best vacation plan at Sportsnet. Books.
He does. The guy, like, to get away in the middle of playoffs, I mean, that should be a fine or somehow.
I don't know.
It doesn't seem right.
I don't know how he does it, but we'll see. He's going to be back on Friday, so hopefully, I guess, or hopefully not. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see if he we'll see if he turns up at the studio on Friday. So lots to get into here, Books. And I mean, game one, more of the same from the Panthers last night. They roll against Carolina, and you know, Randeep and I were talking. It's just they're so good at one limiting their own mistakes, capitalizing on other teams' mistakes. You know, you saw how they were able to beat the pressure from Carolina in a bunch of different ways last night. It feels like they might be, I don't know if you want to call it the best coached team, or they have the most buy-in, or whatever it is, but they're just the most cohesive team, even when you're going up against a high-pressure unit like Carolina.
I agree. You know, the way I look at it is they're the most connected team, and they don't really stray from their identity. They play the same way no matter what. If they're chasing a game, if they're ahead by a couple, if they're on the verge of eliminating a team like Toronto last weekend, they always play within the same structure. And it's not like they have to grossly outshoot the opponent to have success. Like, they win in a variety of ways. If you look at last night, even, you know, Carolina ends up out shooting them by, I think, like 13 shots or something like that. And, you know, if Carolina, if they were going to out-muscle Florida, you would have thought that maybe it would happen last night, especially because they've been home for a few days and have only played 10 playoff games compared to Florida coming off the 7-game set with Toronto and having to travel into Carolina. But the Panthers, they have a recipe, guys, and it works. And they're, the best way I can put it is that they're connected, and they don't stray from what works.
Yeah, and just watching replays of their breakouts, it's on Sportsnet right now, actually, the way that they exit their zone. Like, does that come down to I remember watching them against Vegas a couple of years ago in the Cup Final. It felt like it was, you know, they had an aggressive forecheck, but Vegas was able to solve them. There seems to be more wrinkles to their game. And is that simply just Paul Maurice saying, all right, maybe a couple of years ago there were cracks in our game. We're going to add wrinkles. We're going to add different, you know, situations where players are just so predictable. I guess the word, you know, connected and predictable are aligned, but is that simply down to just amazing coaching?
Yeah, this is good, Randy. I'm kind of glad you brought this up, and I'm going to bore you guys a little bit here.
Please do.
Talk about some scout speak. So, if you watch the Florida Panthers really closely, and you like watch any game in the National Hockey League, and when things start to break down in transition, so imagine a defenseman outlets it to the half wall, and there's a zone exit with possession, so he doesn't bump it back to the middle. So he's skating through the neutral zone. A lot of teams, when things start to get clogged up, they'll regroup, right, reset, and you'll see teams wheel back again, and the wingers end up wheeling back again, and the centerman goes low and slow, and maybe they'll go D to D again to reset. They've only really made about 10 yards of progress, if you will, and then they loop back. What the Florida Panthers do better than any team in the league, in my opinion, is they bump it back without having to totally regroup. There's always layers of support. So when they outlet the puck the first time, if they're contested in the neutral zone, there's somebody in the hip pocket that they can drop it to right away, and they're so close to the red line at that time that off the puck, if they can't carry it in, you know they're dumping and chasing it, and they're going to lay the boom to somebody down low. They're really well connected that way, and they don't waste time having to regroup, which allows the opponent to reset to clog things up again. And it works. That's one of the biggest things that I noticed in the Toronto series. It's something that I've noticed over a long time watching them and how they kind of break out as a unit. But just kind of, you know, for the listeners or even yourselves, just keep an eye on that, how they, it's a layer upon layer upon layer instead of that kind of swinging and regrouping all the time. And it works. And you know what? they're real crafty off the puck too, like little subtle picks here and there and, you know, nudges to open up space. So they're really good at it.
One of my favorite players, like depth players to watch over the last couple of years, has been Eetu Luostarinen. And I know he's a player that you were part of the draft process back in 2017. He's currently leading the Panthers in points, which speaks to the depth that they have. Just seeing him grow as a player, like, what did you see then and what are we seeing now from this player?
I got to say that I never would have ever believed that Eetu Luostarinen was going to be what he is now. there's no question about that. My Finnish colleague, Jari Kekäläinen, who works for the Winnipeg Jets now, he's doing a fabulous job over there. These are the types of players that he unearthed over there. And the thing with Luostarinen and some of these guys, these Finnish players that come over, the Finns, when they figure it out, they are able to play the game a variety of ways. Like Barkov, you know, he's not a one-trick pony. He plays it a variety of ways. Luostarinen, when he was growing up as a younger athlete, he was, you know, long, skilled guy. But now he's got that extra layer of bump and jam to his game, as do all the Florida Panthers, right? It seems like everybody in that room has to buy in to have a B game to promote their A game. And he's part of that. He's just another guy up front that's exceptionally hard to, like, pick your poison, I guess, is where I would go with it. Who do you want to check? Who do you want to hope that doesn't have a big night against you? And they've just got layers and layers, and it's relentless, fellas. It's really hard to defend.
Yeah, and as I was saying earlier, it's not even like it's necessarily, you know, Barkov and Tkachuk are on fire and they're the ones torching everyone, right? I mean, they've been productive, and Verhaeghe certainly has, and Bennett, but it's just, it's up and down the lineup. It's the decor. It's a total team effort right now for the Panthers.
It is. You know, it's... So Ekblad, you know, I've talked about it before. Like, I did have a bias against Seth Jones. It takes big cahoolies as a scout to say you have a bias, because you really shouldn't have a bias sometimes. Yep. But I had a bias against Seth Jones forever. He came through the same draft as Barkov did, and if you guys recall back then, he was projected to be the number one pick, preseason number one pick. And his interview process with us did not go very well in New York City before the draft in New Jersey. And I didn't know on his hardest days, guys, if he really knew what it was going to take. Now, fast forward to today, boy, is he proving me wrong. He's been excellent for Florida, obviously logging a ton of minutes. But what he does, too, when I keep talking about layers in Florida, he adds a layer. So then all of a sudden you see Ekblad getting better looks offensively, or Ekblad getting a little bit more sheltered minutes in. He doesn't have to be the guy in every situation. So it's fabulous the way that Bill Zito and his staff have put together the team. They traded out a boatload of assets, draft capital, prospects, you name it, to make it happen. But on balance, they've caught lightning in a bottle with a lot of guys, and it's working out very well.
What does Carolina need to do differently to make sure this is not a short series for Florida?
Yeah, good question. That's a tough one, right? But yeah. I would say this, they got to start with a lead. They have to somehow try and establish something to make Florida feel uncomfortable. It's a tough building to play in Raleigh. They love, the fans love it there. They tailgate. It's like a football game atmosphere outside the rink, and they get into it. And when they have a lead, again, they're very much like Florida. They're relentless. So they don't change their style of play. They only know how to play one way. The thing that, with the Carolina Hurricanes is that they don't have the scoring depth per se that the Florida Panthers do, like the balance of it. They've got some guys that they need to be better. Svechnikov's going to have to be better. Aho is a fabulous player. They're going to need a lot out of everybody. I'd say 10% more out of everybody if they have it, but they got to not chase the game, because when you start chasing the game against a team like Florida who plays so heavy, boy, oh boy, it's a heavy lift.
All right, before we move over to the West, I do want to hit on the Leafs. You mentioned the style they played against the Panthers, but in the end, another failure for this team. They weren't able to move past the Florida Panthers, and the fans let them know about it, and there's going to be fallout. Now, the question is, you know, how big of a shakeup do you expect here? And when you look at that core four, it was just, can you, you know, when you lose that much at early on in the playoffs, can it kind of seep into the bones a little bit? Can that be a part of your identity, and is a major shakeup required now?
Oh, my first answer is yes. I think it absolutely is. It has to enter into whoever the partner is in trade talk, or certainly in free agency, how you perceive the value of someone like a Mitch Marner. Or I don't think John Tavares is going to leave, but I do believe John Tavares will get paid more money outside of Toronto going forward, coming off a 38 goal season. I've come to the conclusion that sometimes, you know, you can have a group like this, and it's not that they don't have real good players at the top of the table. It just doesn't fit. The puzzle pieces don't fit at the hardest time of year. And you have to be able to mix your skill and will, and their will doesn't come up high enough to match the skill. And that's where B-level players, your opponents, they make life miserable on you at the hardest time of year, and they take away, they strip you down. And these guys are programmed as a unit, to get through those that type of resistance, in my estimation. Now, that's not to say that if you split up the band, that if you put Marner somewhere else next year on a different team, that he might not figure that out, just because the sum of the parts will be different. The insulation in the room might be different. But this group here, it's time for massive change. I was asked this morning in Toronto, you know, maybe there is a way that they bring him back. No, there's no way. I wouldn't, if I'm sitting in that meeting, there's not a chance in heck that I'm saying that we bring Mitch Marner back here. First of all, our fan base, you know, are going to crucify us for it, which doesn't sound like it matters, but it does, because it'll make life miserable on the athlete, and then he's never going to be the best version of himself. But second of all, 9 years is an eternity, guys. Like, this is an eternity. And you just have to figure it out long before now, especially when you're collecting the paychecks that these guys are collecting. They need to make changes, and they need to. I'll take 20 points less here. I'll take a lower percentage on my power play. I'll take way less pretty and a lot more meat and potatoes at the hardest time. And that's exactly what they have to do.
You just described Sam Bennett to me.
Yeah, I did. And that's going to be an overpayment. You know, people. It's fascinating in my role now, because I spit out things that I try and project. I don't spit it out with a bias. I spit it out with a reality, because I've sat in these meetings. And like Sam Bennett, I think that, you know, he would like to be, if I had a number, I think he's going to want around $8 million to stay in Florida. I don't know that they're going to pay him that. If they offered me $7 million, I'd stay all day long. No tax there, obviously lifestyle, unbelievable practice facility. I don't know if you guys have seen that online, what they built on Los Olas at the top of Los Olas Boulevard at the War Memorial. But Vinny Viola, the owner there, oh my goodness, this practice facility, pickleball, they plug in their electric golf carts, the tri-foam, it's crazy. But anyways, I digress. I would never leave, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. But if he ends up in a Vancouver Canucks uniform, for example, or a Toronto Maple Leaf uniform, that's going to start with at least a $9 million. There's going to be an overpayment there.
Yeah, and, you know, just quickly on the Leafs, as you say, like, you would be absolutely committed to walking away from Mitch Marner. Is it almost a situation where the team has to accept, hey, we might take a step backwards next year, because you're not, as you said, you're not replacing all the regular season production for Mitch Marner on the UFA market this season, but you might just have to take that step backwards in order to keep your options open and hope that a year from now or 2 years from now, you can take that big jump forward.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, on the micro, you're going to look at it that way. How are we going to replace 100 points? Well, you're not. That's the long and short of that. What you are going to do, though, is you're going to make your team look different. And, you know, that's how I feel about the Canucks too, Jay. Like, I really do feel that way. Like they have to, when JT Miller left the team and you know, that growl, that type of player walked out the door, everything up front, especially with Pettersson, there wasn't enough accountability there. A lot went wrong. I don't want to regurgitate the whole thing. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that you can't have all choir boys. You can't all have the same looking players in your roster on your team. And that might take a step back, but you're going to take two steps forward eventually.
All right, going over to the Western Conference Final, which gets going tonight. Rematch from last year, Edmonton versus Dallas. Of course, we know how it played out last season. What are you looking for? What are you watching in this matchup, Books?
I'm excited that I think both teams are going to be playing. Hopefully, they're relatively healthy, both teams, first of all, which is great news. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a war between two really, really good teams. I do think they're different. I think Dallas is, on paper, if you just take a look at the entirety of the lineup, they're a better team. than Edmonton, you know, on paper as a playoff team. Getting Heskanen back and going here again is massive. Ekholm coming back for the Oil potentially here is also massive. If you guys recall last year on their run to the Stanley Cup final, the Oil, they ran off like 26 or 28 straight penalty kills at one point in time, and Ekholm's obviously a big part of that. If they can get 20 minutes out of him, it's a huge boost in a lot of areas when he comes back into the lineup. It's going to come down to goaltending, though. I mean, it just will. I know that's easy to say. It's always that way in playoffs. Skinner's playing the best. He's played maybe all year right now. But Ottinger's on a heater as well. My trust is higher in the Dallas side of the ledger there. But we'll see. We'll see what happens here. Edmonton, I really love the some of the changes they made in the last round. Like, you know, when I talk about kind of that B-game player in your lineup, like they played Draisaitl on the road with Podkolzin and Kapanen. And that's something, isn't it? Because you got a couple of guys that Podkolzin plays heavy, Kapanen burns, and then you got Draisaitl, the skill guy. They've mixed up their lineup a little bit up front to make them harder to check, but also they check harder with that type of associated lineup. So it's going to be, I believe, a long series. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes seven. If it goes seven, the Oil are going to be feeling really good about themselves. But I came home from Texas at the U18. Let me tell you something, boys. Down there in that Dallas area, there's a lot of that Kelly Green all over the place. They are a hockey town. They're loving it.
All right. Yeah, they got to make up for the Dallas Cowboys not being good, so the Dallas Stars are stepping up. You know, the matchup game is going to be really interesting here because Pete DeBoer has gone Harley and Heiskanen together. You know, obviously with McDavid and Draisaitl and what they can do in separate lines, like, if you're Pete DeBoer, and listen, he's a very accomplished coach. He's always in the Final Four. Do you keep them together when you've got those two guys on separate lines against you?
I would say yes. I think you do. It's the thing with Harley is, and that's a wagon of a pairing. Like that's a really good Thomas Harley. Think about Four Nations boys.
Yes.
Like I was surprised at the level. Like this kid, he's got ice in his veins, and then Heskanen's that skater, that guy who can push it, and also defend with purpose. But they're different. Harley's got that pushback. I do keep them together. I guess it is, if you go to the second unit, I see what you're saying, because if you get the Lindell and CeCe, for example, or even if you get that harder matchup, Petrovic and Bichelle against one of the top six or the top two lines against Edmonton, you might be exposing yourself. But then he'll get creative up front, and he'll make sure that one of those top that top groups up front are kind of assisting there. Duchesne, Johnston, Robertson, like hints. I think that McDavid's going to get a healthy dose of Rupe Hintz this whole series, and then I'll take my risk with whoever my second D pairing is with whatever line I have to go against Draisaitl, for example, if they split that up. So, yeah, that's a long answer, but I'm going to challenge them with my best group of five to win that battle.
You know, we were talking earlier about how well-coached the Panthers are, and, you know, there's a lot of big-name brand coaches in this Final Four, obviously, with Brindamore, Moore, Maurice, Pete DeBoer. Is Chris Knobloch now one of the most underrated coaches in the NHL, maybe the most underrated? Because we all look at it and say, well, it's McDavid and Draisaitl, right? You just throw them out there, you play them big minutes, and your team's going to win. But I look at the contributions they're getting further down the lineup, some of the adjustments he's made, the lineup changes, the way they're defending as a team. I think he's done a pretty phenomenal job guiding that group now back-to-back Western Conference Finals.
I've seen him evolve quite a bit. When he first came on board, He's pretty reserved, right? He's buttoned up pretty well. Although there's a lot more gray hair sprouting off that that turnip that I see behind the bench now too, because that happens, the stress of the game. But he's pretty buttoned up. I've really appreciated the adjustments. He just hit it right on the head. They've made a lot of adjustments, and he got a lot harder in media avails on this group in the second half of this year. His expectation and his tone, if you will, went to a different level, and that told me something, because if you're outwardly doing that to media in avails, just once in a while, not all the time, you know that behind closed doors, you're cracking the whip a little bit more and again, raising the bar. So the buy-in is there. They've been there to the Stanley Cup final, but it's always good for a team, even though you've been there, to see those adjustments, feel like the coach is making adjustments, subtle ones even, to put us in the best position to win games. And yeah, he's evolved a lot. Is he the most underrated coach? That's hard for me to determine. But boy, oh boy, he's a legit high-end NHL coach. There's no question about that.
Hey, Book, since we last chatted with you, a couple of interesting items of Canucks news. Of course, one, Adam Foote as the new head coach of the team, but also Tom Volander finally signed his ELC, and he won't come over and play for Abbotsford in these Calder Cup playoffs, but he's obviously going to be at training camp and have a shot to make the NHL next season. What was your reaction to that deal finally getting done? And considering how it played out, I mean, what were your what will your expectations be for Volander when training camp rolls around?
Well, my first reaction was, thank goodness. I didn't want this to drag into him going back to school. That was real. I was fearful of that, actually. I wouldn't have allowed that to happen, to be perfectly frank. If it broke down to that extent and he was going back to school, we don't really have to talk about him now, but there's going to be another prospect on the horizon that these types of things happen to. And when you get into those situations, it's very uncomfortable, and you're at that point probably shopping the prospect at the draft to see if what his value is out there. Having said that, coming to training camp next year, I think he's got a chance to make the team. I think that you look at Mancini, you know, himself, obviously Pettersson. Pettersson's going to play bigger minutes next year, the young one that is. And at least I believe he is. He showed me down the stretch what he's capable of. He played to a player type. But I can see on the right side, Willander, you know, vying for a job. Is it going to be a straight line? Absolutely not. It won't. It's a heavy lift to play defense in the National Hockey League. He's a great skater, guys. You know that. I know that. So as long as he's on pucks first early in his career, moves them to safe areas of the ice without exposing too much thought and process. Don't be out of position. Just play to your strengths. He'll be fine. He's going to challenge. This is great news for the Vancouver Canucks. It's a great pick. And it's really cool to see that they're graduating some young defensemen into the system, because if you can get them guys to stick in your top six for now at a young age, that planes out to be a real good setup long term. So I think they're well positioned there in the back end.
Yeah, and it's been a while too, so it's a welcome change of pace for the Canucks organization. Books, great stuff as always, man. We'll do this again next week. We'll see if Drance makes it back from Jamaica. All right, Books is done with
Books
us.
Books is out. All he had to hear was interview done.
That was Rick Dhaliwal-esque. Normally Books is very friendly. He'll you know, give us a thank you back and everything.
He's just really mad that Drance is in Jamaica.
Yeah, click.
Babyface assassin Jason Buchla.
That was incredible.
There's no way he meant that.
No. Books is the nicest guy. Absolutely not.
Books is so nice, he might call back after that and be like, I'm so sorry for hanging up on
you. I want to say thank you to them. All right, just before we go to break here, time for One to Watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. And I'm piggybacking a little bit on what something that Jason Buchla just had to say, but of course we're focusing on game one between Edmonton and Dallas tonight, and I'm going with Thomas Harley. And with Heiskanen and Harley as the two stars on that blue line for Dallas, I think it's going to be such a balance for both of them getting up and supporting the forwards without leaving yourself open to the counterattack and to the odd man rushes, especially from Dreisaitl and McDavid, but even farther down the lineup, right? Like Kapanen has the speed. Connor Brown has got a bunch of breakaways and odd man rushes. Edmonton has the ability to do it. So you're going to need to jump up and support the forwards and expose Edmonton that way, but you have to do it intelligently without leaving yourself open on the other end. And I think Heiskanen and Harley are phenomenal players. Like, as Book said, the coming out party for Thomas Harley at the Four Nations was incredible. Can he keep doing it in this series and make those reads, make those right plays? He's my one to watch tonight.
Yeah, he's had a great few months, and it also is paired with that Miro Heiskanen injury, right? He got a more advanced role with the Dallas Stars. That gave him even more confidence. And having both of these guys in your lineup playing on the same pairing, yeah, we could be talking about the best pairing in the NHL, not only this playoffs, but potentially for years, kind of along the same lines that we were talking about Quinn Hughes and Philip Hronek and, of course, Cale Makar and Devon Taves. Like, it's got that feeling to it. For me, I'm going defenseman. I'm going on the other team, though. Edmonton's had a heck of a stretch here defensively, and that is despite having Evan Bouchard on the ice. And remember,
no Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah, exactly. And with Evan Bouchard, he's my player to watch, because at the beginning of the playoffs, it felt like we were criticizing everything he did. Every mistake he made ended up in the back of their net. That's not happening anymore. And he's playing with Brett Kulak. This is a better defensive team overall, but he is leading the NHL postseason in puck possession, and he's limiting those mistakes. So for this team to get a good start against the Dallas team without Matthias Ekholm in the lineup, You still need Evan Bouchard to be a difference maker, but limit those mistakes against a deep team like Dallas that has, you know, offensive talent up and down the lineup. You're not necessarily able to hide in Evan Bouchard, so you need to see him thrive. You need him to be comfortable and confident, and that's why I think he's going to be a key player to watch here, where, you know, Dallas, if you make that mistake, they're going to jump on you. They got three or four lines that can do that, so you have to be playing your best, and of late, Bouchard's been doing well. Can he continue that?
That's one to watch, brought to you by Delaney's OK Tire. It's time to put on your Toyo tires. Whether you drive a car, light truck, or van, Toyo tires are designed to perform in all kinds of conditions. Visit Delaney's OK Tire in Langley and Aldergrove. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts and questions in. We've got an open segment next. I want to talk about a player familiar to hockey fans in Vancouver who might be on the trade block, whether that's of interest to the Canucks, but also generally teams that might be in transition, teams that might be looking to shake things up and could be interesting trading partners with the Vancouver Canucks. So send your thoughts in on that or anything else. More Canucks talk next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd, Randeep Janda here. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. I was so frazzled by Books dropping on us there in the last segment. I forgot to tell you that guests on Sportsnet 650 call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Books did text me to apologize.
Did he? The hotline was so hot that he had to drop off immediately.
That's right. Yeah. But Books, as we said, he's such a good guy. No way he did that on purpose.
Not only did he text you, he texted Lena.
He covered all his bases.
I don't think he has my number.
No.
I didn't get that text.
Absolutely not. All right, 650-650, as mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And one thing I wanted to bring up, almost more like it's a prerequisite at this point, because this is a player's name who has been connected to Vancouver so often and at so many different times in, what, the last 6 years, that it would almost feel strange not to bring it up, even though I feel like now we're in this moment where it doesn't really make any sense. It makes even less sense than it used to make. And, of course, the player I'm talking about is Bowen Byram with the Buffalo Sabres, who Elliot Friedman reporting on 32 Thoughts today that he's available. The Sabres gauging the market, I think, was the language that Friedman used. So basically seeing what's out there, seeing which teams might be interested, shopping, you might want to say as well, Bowen Byram on the market. Of course, Byram from BC, fantastic career with the Vancouver Giants, super high draft pick when the draft was in Vancouver in 2019. Had that phenomenal postseason run with the Colorado Avalanche when they won the Cup. He was a huge part of that. In his career, I think it's fair to say, has stagnated since then. Now, injuries are part of that and all of it, but his stock is a lot lower than it was even a couple of years ago right now. And I think, again, a couple of years ago, if he is on the market and he's being shopped, Canucks fans would be lining up saying, okay, go get Bowen Byram. Now, is it even of interest? Because you look down the left side, you've got Quinn Hughes still for two more years, you hope. You signed Marcus Pettersson to an extension. You've got DPD, who looks like he's going to be a fixture on your left side for years to come. Is there, like, even at a discount rate, you know, at the low ebb of his value, is that even a player you're interested in? Is that worth picking up and making a call to Buffalo to see what they want back for Bowen Byram?
At this point, it's not. It's not a fit timing-wise. So Bowen Byram, based on Elliott's reporting, wants a bigger contract down the road and a bigger role. Buffalo, they're pretty stacked at defense too. Younger, but still a couple of probably number one, number two defensemen in front of him. He's not going to get that role there. Mm-hmm. You're in Vancouver, it doesn't make sense either with Quinn Hughes. But let me pose this question. If this was later in the year or next offseason, I'd be listening.
Ooh.
I'd be making
so
that.
So you're saying,
in case you need insurance, you need cover.
This is the Quinn Hughes insurance policy.
Yes.
Bowen Byram.
But the timing is not right, because if you're Buffalo, you probably want to make that move now. You need to make some sort of big moves to make sure that your team is better than they were last year. You want to maybe shake up the room. You want people that want to be there, and if they want a bigger role, like Bowen Byram apparently wants, it's probably to say, hey, not the best situation there. So for Buffalo, it feels like this is probably a more of an immediate thing that they have to do. For Vancouver, it's not, because you're right. That left side is stacked, but that doesn't mean it'll stay stacked, is the question, right?
And Josh is thinking, not Josh Elliott Wolf, but Texter Josh is thinking along the same lines as you. He says, do you think Byram could be a potential backup option for the Canucks if Quinn walks, allowing you to still have a good back end and spend the Quinn money on offense? My problem with the Bowen Byram as Quinn Hughes insurance policy is, it's like, if you owned a Ferrari and then it got wrecked, you're like, well, I'm going to get a Lexus to replace it. It's like, well, a Lexus is a nice car, but it's not a Ferrari. You're not replacing anything. It's completely different. What, Dom's smirking at me. You know what I'm saying? It's nowhere close to a Ferrari.
I don't know if Bowen's Lexus.
Well, do you want me to go farther down? I was trying to be nice.
I'd put him in the, I don't know, Corvette category?
Corvette's nicer than a Lexus.
A Lexus, yeah.
You think he's better than a Lexus?
Yeah.
Hey, as a GM guy, I approve that Corvette message. Absolutely.
Yeah, Corvette. I think Byram's.
Do you think he's viewed that way? I don't think so.
As of right now, this is also a bet on what you think he can be in a situation where he's probably your one or two, right? Like currently behind Rasmus Dahlin, Owen Power, he's a number three defenseman. I think. Do you believe ultimately comes down to, do you believe Bowen Byram can be a number one or number two defenseman on a team? Like, that's...
Yes.
And I know he's had a couple of rough years, but I have some belief in the player that I think he could be that player.
But see, I don't know that it's even... I don't know if that's the question with Byram around the NHL right now. Because I think if people thought his floor is a number three defenseman, a number three defenseman is an incredibly valuable piece. Like, there would be a really robust market for him if that was the case. I think people are wondering, if you're trying to be a Stanley Cup team, is he still a top four guy for you? How comfortable making that bet are you? I think that's more where the conversation is with Bowen Byram at this point, right? Like, the Corvette, listen, and I love the player, obviously, as a BC guy. And again, he was phenomenal for the Giants. He's had incredible moments in his career. I'm not trying to take shots at him here. I just think we got to recognize how far that stock has fallen around the league.
It has, and it's a bet on a projection, and he's 23 years of age, right? So it's not like we're talking about a 25 or 26-year-old player that is set in his ways. There's still room to grow. Straight out, getting him and trying to replace a player of that quality, yeah, you're still taking the L on that deal, right? Quinn Hughes, unless Kale McCarr is coming to Vancouver and you lose out on
Quinn
Hughes.
That's the thing. You're going to lose out. I kind of take issue with the whole idea of like, well, we'll bring in this guy to replace Quinn Hughes. It's like, no, you won't.
No, it's profile, right? You're trying to replace a profile.
It's like Moneyball. We'll rebuild him in the aggregate.
Good luck with that.
You're trying to replace a profile. You're not replacing the player.
But the idea that you're going to lose Quinn Hughes and you're like, well, we'll get another left-handed puck-moving defenseman and we'll just keep on trucking. Like, come on. It's over. It's a wrap if Quinn Hughes leaves.
You still need a team, Jamie. It's not like they're going to fold the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, but you're not like plugging a guy in to fill his role.
Well, you still need a puck-moving defenseman. I don't care if he's on the left or the right.
I just think you're thinking on a complete... You're not thinking in the here and now if Quinn Hughes leaves. You're thinking down the road.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you have to think about that in so many ways. We're not talking about like a guy that's chopped liver. Like he's 28, 29. We're talking about a 23-year-old.
No, I said he's a Lexus. Lexus is a nice car.
I prefer Corvette.
It's a high-end Toyota.
It's a Corvette. Wow, Dom turning up his nose at a Lexus.
It's a high-end Toyota. That's all it is.
This is when Dom, as the producer or the board op for the show, has to run to the boss's office to make sure
I'm going to have to do the sponsor list. That's a good point. I'm going to have to do now mentally a breakdown of like all the top defensemen in the NHL and what vehicle they translate to. Maybe I didn't go high end enough. What's above a Ferrari? Like a Bugatti? Is that better than a Ferrari? I don't know.
No, Lambos are up there too. Depending on what kind of Lambo you're going, I think Lewis Hamilton has $4 million Lambo.
I feel like Lambo versus Ferrari is
a
matter of taste.
Kale McCarr versus Quinn Hughes.
I mean, no, Quinn Hughes is better.
Yeah, I agree, but. There's other people in the league that will say, hey, Kale McCarr is up there too.
Yeah,
throw McLaren in there.
Sure.
Can you can buy a McLaren, right?
Yeah. There's plenty in Vancouver. Come on.
I don't know about playing.
Randy would know.
You're a Mount Pleasant guy. I'm sure there's McLaren's up and down Main Street.
Big. People love to just cruise their McLarens up and down Main Street on a Friday night. Big, big, very popular. All right. So I don't think Bowen Byram is going to be high on the shopping list.
No, not for Vancouver this year. Yeah.
But the report still, and as much as I'm saying here and that his stock has fallen, and it has, he's still a 23-year-old defenseman who's been a part of a winning team, a Stanley Cup winning team, high draft pedigree. Yes, he's an RFA, so that complicates things. You got to be willing to pay him. It's still an interesting player that's on the market. And I think more than anything, it illustrates kind of what we already expected from Buffalo, which is after yet another disappointing season, yet another season on the outside looking into the playoffs, they're going to be motivated to do things. And they clearly set up as a, if you're trying to make a list of teams that are willing to think of things, teams that are willing to consider whatever offer you're throwing past them, Buffalo is going to be high in that list because they just need to make changes. So if it's not Bowen Byram, because he's just not a match for what the Canucks need right now, do you see other pieces, plausible pieces on Buffalo's roster that could make sense for the Canucks?
The first one that comes to mind, because his name was out there at the trade deadline, is JJ Paterka, right? RFA this offseason, over 60-point player. If you're trying to maybe just think of a number that he's going to get paid this offseason, I'm probably looking at, depending on term, of course, is probably, you know, if Tage Thompson makes 7.1 for that team, Paterka's probably going to make 6, if not more, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a player I look at. He's fast. He's also 23 years of age. He's a player that's got some offensive chops, of course, picking up 60-plus points. And I think on normal teams, this would not be a player that you consider trading just because he has that profile that works so well in today's NHL. But this is Buffalo, folks. And his name was out there.
Who
at the
knows?
Deadline,
his name was out there at the deadline, which was really weird. I didn't get that at all.
I don't understand why, but if you're going to have that opinion in Buffalo for whatever reason, of course you got to do your due diligence as a team to say why was his name out there.
Mm-hmm.
But as a player straight up, that's number one on my list for Buffalo. Make that call and say, hey, we heard this was going on at the trade deadline.
What's the deal?
What's the deal? What's it going to take? We're interested.
Yeah, Paterka is definitely, he's got to be number one on the list. And somebody texts in here, Curtis texts in, Alex Tuck, big fan of Alex Tuck's game. Now, he does have some no-trade protection. I think only a 5-team no-trade list per Puckpedia, but still could complicate things a little bit. I believe he's a local Buffalo guy, too.
So wears an A as well.
So that might be a little bit more of a pipe dream.
But his name was out there, too.
That kind of illustrates the point, right? Like, who knows what Buffalo is going to do? So you almost have to make the call just because they're in so much flux. They're in so much disarray constantly that they might do something goofy. They signed Jason Zucker to an extension at the trade deadline rather than trade him for some reason.
Yeah,
Jason Zucker's making $4.75 million for the Buffalo Sabres for the next 2 years. Why did they do that? What was the thinking there?
He's going to stay. He's not going to leave.
But, that's true.
You know, in Buffalo, they don't have, it's kind of like the Winnipeg complex, but Winnipeg is good right now. So you've got players like Neil Pionk and, you know, Niederreiter and others locking in to say, we like this situation. Buffalo's the opposite. Buffalo doesn't have that winning culture. So when you get players that are maybe B level or B minus level players that want to stay, you lock them in because you don't have that many options.
It's the Winnipeg of the United States.
It is.
Just sign the guys who want to stay.
Just better Wi-Fi.
Do whatever you have to do to sign the guys who want to stay. Are there other teams that maybe aren't quite at that kind of desperation, shake it up level that Buffalo is at, but that you look at and think, okay, they could be a really interesting trading partner for the Canucks just because they might have the appetite to do something, the appetite to get creative, the appetite to make significant changes to their roster?
Yeah, the other team that came to mind immediately was the Detroit Red Wings because this was supposed to be the year that they took a step up, and they kind of did, but it still ends up being a disappointment. And that mix there, they've got some young players, Moritz Seider, of course, you know, you go up and down that list. They've got some, you know, Marco Kasper's a player on that team as well, but they've got a lot of vets, a lot of aging vets. So it feels like with Yzerman, you know, what's your end game here? It feels like they need a bit of a jolt. This year was when they were supposed to make the playoffs. That doesn't happen. So, you know, Lucas Raymond has taken a great step the last couple of years. He's been a fantastic player for them. We've often talked about, like, if they're trying to shake it up and if there is some sort of incentive for the team and the player to make a move. Is Dylan Larkin, is this the summer that Dylan Larkin potentially shakes loose? Like, that's one team I look at to say, what's your angle here? Like, what's your next move? Because they've spent a lot of money and hasn't really gotten them anywhere.
I just think I get the Dylan Larkin conversation, and I get what you're saying about Detroit needing to take those steps forward and needing to make those next moves. But how are you getting better by trading Dylan Larkin is the question for me. Fair. And I think the Dylan Larkin trade would make the most sense if it was like in a Mikko Rantanen situation. You know what I mean? Where the Canes used Marty Natchez to go get Mikko Rantanen. So you're giving up a really good player, but you're getting a superstar back. If it was that type of deal on the table, I think that's where Detroit starts to consider moving Dylan Larkin. But are you going to trade your number one center for a winger you like, or even a blue liner? You know what I mean?
Like, it'll be more of a like to like.
What's the fit? So are you saying Elias Pettersson? Is that where you're going with this? I'm putting you on the spot, Randy.
Like, you gotta, in order to get Dylan Larkin, you gotta give up something. So if that conversation of Elias Pettersson still being moved is one that is still out there, that is the market I look at.
Yeah.
That is the market. I know there's been a lot of discussion about Buffalo. That ship seems to have sailed. At the deadline, they made their move, and Dylan Cousins and all that.
Never say never, though.
You
speak about, like, they need to get guys who are under contract. Like, he's under contract.
It could happen, right? Like, Buffalo is a total wild card market, but I also have Detroit in that mix to say, wait a second, if they're trying to shake it up and maybe you get a little bit more because Dylan Larkin's value is, based on last year, higher. He is a little bit older as well, but the fact of the matter is he's still a high-level player and he's able to produce. He's got cachet in the NHL. If you're looking for a blockbuster, that could fit the role.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Another team that jumps to mind for me, if you're thinking teams motivated to make changes, shake things up, what about the, arguably other than the Canucks, or maybe even more so than the Canucks, the most disappointing team in the NHL last year, the Nashville Predators? The off-season champions, Nashville Predators, who got off to a disastrous start, never recovered, missed the playoffs. I don't think Barry Trotz is going to be shy about being bold, mixing things up there, trying to make some changes. And it doesn't, they don't necessarily have that young forward in that 25 to 26 age range with upside that you're going to be targeting. But one name that stands out to me, if we're looking for more of that veteran, maybe closer to a Sam Bennett, but you can't get Sam Bennett, Ryan O'Reilly making $4.5 million for 2 more years after this one, so 2 more years starting next year, somehow has zero no-trade protection whatsoever. In a league where everyone gets like, we'll give you an 8-team no-trade list, or we'll give you a 10-team no-trade list, like half the league has it at least. How does Ryan O'Reilly, cup-winning veteran, Selke guy Ryan O'Reilly, not have any no trade protection? I don't know how that happened, but he doesn't. So he's available to be traded if the Canucks are interested.
You know what's so wild about that situation with Ryan O'Reilly? The two reasons that he gave for wanting to go to Nashville were family. Usually you want no trade clause when you take your family to a new city. He loves music and is a guitarist. So from a interest perspective, like, he loves the city and what.
Okay. Well, sorry, buddy. You should have got that baked into the contract.
And
here's coming
the third
to Vancouver
thing.
Now.
Here's the third thing. His brother Cal plays for the AHL affiliate Nashville Predators, the Milwaukee Admirals. We got three reasons why he's so tied to that market, yet there's no trade.
So, hey, maybe Barry Trotz is feeling ruthless.
It wouldn't be the first time. Trotz has got that potentially in him. But, okay, why it makes sense for Vancouver? The acquisition cost would not be high.
No. Salary manageable, 2 years left.
Matchup center, who still got some chops. Like, I know he doesn't have the high-end ceiling, but, like, we talk about net front players owning that slot area on the power play. Like, Ryan O'Reilly's very effective in that area, still to this day, 5-on-4.
Yes.
And if you want some snarl, and, you know, I think Books did a great job of describing what the Canucks are missing right now. It's the snarl factor.
Yeah.
Snarl per 60.
Well, and again,
JT,
if you think, okay, Sam Bennett is kind of the ideal from that front, that's what you want, you're probably not getting him. And if you could, the contract would be astronomical. So you start going down the list of, okay, who can replicate a lot of what Sam Bennett brings, even if he's not as good and he's not as desirable anymore. And Ryan O'Reilly, I think, is a really interesting candidate there. Now, again, you always come back to, well, what would Nashville want? And I think this is why they could be an interesting team, because who knows what direction Nashville's going in, right? Are they just going to run it back and think, well, okay, this team has had a year to gel now and we think we're going to be better? Or are they going to start to transition? Are they going to say, you know what, this didn't work, going all in on these vets, and we're going to start to pivot, we want to get younger? Maybe they would be interested in bringing in some young players in exchange for a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. I just think there's a lot of potential for different paths forward with Nashville.
Yeah, if you want a hard-nosed player with some offensive pop, like, he's not going to be the guy that he was when St. Louis won the Cup.
No.
Right? Like, we saw, remember in that Vancouver series, even in the bubble.
In the bubble, yeah.
Like, Bo Horvat had a great start to that series, and then who elevated their game? Ryan O'Reilly. Like, mm-hmm. He made it very close. They eventually end up losing to Vancouver. I think that would be a pretty interesting buy-low option. Kind of along the same lines as a Philippe Deneau in L.A. 32 years of age, yeah. His salary's a little higher. But if they're looking to shake it up, can you get somebody that plays? There's a little bit more offense in Ryan O'Reilly's game than Philippe Deneau. But, you know, that's another type of player that you're saying, okay, if you can't get Sam Bennett,
yeah,
who fits a profile of being a matchup center?
And by the way, on that point, Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texted in, and I still feel like LA is a team to make a trade with. They've got to be desperate to make changes given how these last few years have gone. So that's an interesting one as well. By the way, Ian and Dunbar said, never compare players to cars. Ferraris are unreliable, high maintenance, overpriced. That's from Ian, I guess, taking umbrage that I compared Quinn Hughes to a Ferrari. And I said, well, give me your comp then. He never replied. I want to know what car it would be appropriate to compare Quinn Hughes to.
That's why I'm a GM guy. Proud company man, all right?
All about those Corvettes. All right, that's the show for today. Shout out to Randeep for filling in over the last couple of days. Thank you, Randeep. Always a pleasure. Glad you got to experience the crossover today.
Yeah, I'll very be ready exciting. Next time. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to disrupt.
Yeah.
I'm going to be like Florida on the Fortress.
I was going to say, jump in with those sharp elbows. Go absolutely. To the net like Sam Bennett. Doesn't matter who's in front of you. Just go to the net.
That first game / crossover was always the nerve-wracking one. I'll be ready for the next one.
Thanks to Randeep for sitting in for the last couple of days. Landon Ferraro will be with me for an hour tomorrow. So half co-host Landon Ferraro tomorrow, and then Drance expected to be back on Friday. Thanks for listening. We're back tomorrow for more Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.